You are listening to Dauber Prospects Radio, episode 33, season 2. It's our season premiere, highlighting some guys who stood out at the prospect tournaments last week and discuss the players who are playing for roster spots in training camp. We also catch up with Ryan Wegman of McKean's Hockey to discuss their yearbook. So let's get started. Hey everybody, Paul Zwombeck here. Welcome to the second season, episode 33 of Dauber Prospects Radio, the best and only fantasy hockey program dedicated to hockey prospects. The DPR show is produced every other week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at dauberprospects.com. Come back often and subscribe to our show on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at @DPR_show and can support us at patreon.com/DPR show. I am with my co-host Peter Harling, managing editor of dauberprospects.com. We're back for another season of Dauber Prospects Radio. Peter, we made it. We're in second season. How does it feel?
Feels pretty good. We're cagey old veterans now. We're no longer rookies or prospects.
Yeah, I hope our listeners feel the same way, that we're no longer the new guys on the block. We are in it for the long haul, and yeah, second season. We're back for another full-fledged season, and we're going to bring back some of our segments from our first season, like Stay or Nay. And we're also going to do Who Would You Rather, but those are for episodes to come. Today, we're just going to talk prospect tournament. Let's get right into the prospect tournament. You ready to go?
Fired up.
All right. First off, we got to say that the prospect tournaments were broken down in articles on dauberprospects.com by a bunch of our writers that were either live in the arena watching games or were watching it very closely on streams and stuff. So if you want more in-depth, we're just going to rhyme off three or four guys each from the tournaments that caught our eye. But if you want to see a in-depth look, head to dauberprospects.com under our article so you can find them. So, Peter, who's your first guy who caught your eye?
Spencer Fu from the Calgary Flames. We've talked about him a couple times on the podcast already. You never know how close these college free agents are when they come out of college. He's played his 4 years, so he's not a teenager anymore. He's 21-ish. He jumped right in to the Flames roster in the tournament, and man, he looked good. He played a little bit more physically than I thought he would, being a bit of an undersized guy. He had a huge impact on the power play. It seemed like the power play kind of ran through him, and he was, I thought, equally efficient at either distributing the puck or taking shots and sniping, and he scored a couple of goals. I think there's an opening in the Calgary Flames top six, and I wasn't too confident about what his chances of making the team would be going into this offseason when they signed him. I was a little bit more optimistic on players jumping into the roster like Zach Aston-Reese or Henrik Hapala. But after watching him play in that tournament, I was like, oh my god, this guy's much better than I thought. And I wouldn't rule out the possibility of him not only making the roster to start the season, but playing in on a line with Goudreau and Monahan. I think there's an opening there. Last year it was filled by Michael Ferland. So if you're looking for, depends, I guess, what the Flames want to put on the wing on that line. Do they want someone who can, you know, create a little space and has a little sandpaper, or do they want to just load it up on skill and score more? He's only 45% owned on Fantrax, so I think there's a lot of opportunity there for a bunch of poolies to pick him up and roll the dice on him.
Yeah, imagine seeing Fu and Gaudreau just dance around the ice, and then Big Monahan just down the middle. That would be awesome to see. I was going to ask, do you think there's room for another small skilled forward on Calgary? Have we seen another team do this with two small guys? Do they have two small guys in top six? Can you think of a team that has two undersized guys?
I don't know how big all the guys on the triplets line are in Tampa, but I know Tyler Johnson's kind of wee. Andre Palat is kind of medium sized. I'm not sure what size Kucherov is off the top of my head. You know, the needle on that in the NHL for the last couple of years has been, like, dropping from, you know, got to be 6 foot two, 200 plus pounds to play in the NHL. That needle's been moving down steadily, and it's not stopped. Under 6 feet used to be he's pretty undersized. Now it's, like, 5'10 and under. is considered undersized. Like, if you're 6 feet, that's average. That used to be, borderline small. Size still matters, I think, in the NHL, but that's continuing to change. And, as long as you can have speed and skill, it doesn't really matter if you're, sub 5'10". I think that's what teams are looking for. So I think Spencer Fu, from what I saw, and it was just a short tournament, and I saw, I think 1.5 games with Calgary in it, but so, out of the about 5 periods that I've seen him play, I was impressed. But it's a small sample size, but I'm reading a lot of other good things about him too. So, yeah, I think there's room for small guy.
Yeah, and I bring it up because I can't think off the top of my head two small players playing in the top six that are both producing in the NHL. I know the needle is moving towards smaller guys, but I can't recall two guys in the top six that are both considered small. But Gaudreau's doing it in Calgary, so I don't see why Fu can't do it as well. Next on your list, Peter, who do we got?
Another player that I've spoken about before, Tucker Poolman, defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets. Now, the last time we talked about him, I believe we were saying that, he had some double shoulder off-season surgery. So he might not be ready for the start of the season, which means he probably starts in the AHL and blah, blah, blah. He played in the prospect tournament. He's good to go. And he looked good. He was their best defenseman. And, it's the prospect tournament. It didn't have Byfuglien and Myers and Trouba in it. So, in perspective, but still, he was the best defenseman that they had. And, the second best podcast out there beside ours, the Bobcast, he's got a bunch of episodes that he just released, interviews with GMs, and I listened to the one today with Sheveldayoff, and they talked about Poolman making the roster, and he said it's up to him and what he does in training camp. So this is a player that's 10% owned on Fantrax, and he's a good puck-carrying defenseman. He plays defense the way the NHL plays it today, and he's got decent size too. So this is a player that just kind of more of an update on what we talked about before. I'm hopefully I got some raised some eyebrows from people. I was like, Tucker Poolman, I'm gonna have to look into this guy later because he's injured. Well, he's not. He recovered and he's good to go. So look into him.
All right, excellent. A defenseman that I want to point out to the listeners is Ethan Barry. I really enjoyed his game. He probably could have been named the best, most impressive defenseman at the Penticton tournament for the Edmonton Oilers. He did get a bit physical, which is nice for a 5'11", 200-pound Ethan Bear. He can move the puck like no tomorrow. So he's 33% owned. Ethan Bear, I think, was the most impressive defenseman at the tournament.
Yeah, I was interested in watching him too. Him and Caleb Jones are the two defensemen from Edmonton that I really had my eye on, and I expected similar results. And yeah, you're right, man. Ethan Bear was he was the better of the two in the tournament. Do you got another defenseman from Edmonton that jumped out at you?
Yeah, the big guy Zayat Pagan, 10% owned on Fantrax. He's got a booming shot. He broke Thatcher Demko's mask with one of his shots. That's just incredible. And then he ended up blowing one past him right after that. He could be in the NHL sooner than later. And I think Griffin Reinhart moving out to the Vegas Golden Knights moves Zayat up the depth chart. He's still got Ethan Bear and Caleb Jones to probably jump over. But I think they're different types of players. I don't think Pagan's the big puck-moving guy like Ethan Bear or Caleb Jones. I think he's the guy with a booming shot that they want to put on maybe a second power play down the line. I think the Bakersfield Condors are going to be really good this year in the AHL. They're getting a lot of guys turning pro.
Yeah. I watched that goal that he scored and I was really impressed with it. It was an incredible shot. It was a nice pass from off the wall, and he was in the high slot just inside the blue line, and he was in motion when he let the one-timer go, and it requires a little bit more skill when you're moving and you got to one-time it. You got to time it all really perfectly. And not only did he like time it perfectly, he got everything on it and put it right in the corner. Like, the kid's got a bomb of a shot. And he didn't have to stop it and then shoot. He just like walked right into it and hammered it. It was pretty impressive. He's huge, too. He's like 6'9" or something crazy like that.
6'6", 205 pounds.
6'6". Yeah, he's okay, 6'9", maybe not. But he's ginormous. He's got to get a little bit of a mean streak to him, though.
Yeah, I agree with that. Another Edmonton Oiler that kind of stood out to both of us, we both put him on our list, Joe Gambardella. Let's go with what you thought of Gambardella.
Okay, so there's another player we talked about in the past. He's a college free agent, so he played his 4 years, and the Oilers signed him. I didn't think he had a chance of making the Oilers roster. I thought he was destined to Bakersfield for sure. You know, to your point, they're going to have a better team. They made him the captain of the rookie tournament. I guess, you know, he's 20-plus years old, so that might have something to do with it, and he's got a little bit more experience, perhaps. But, yeah, I thought he had a solid tournament. He was driving the offense. He was really involved in the play. He was really pushing the pace of the play. And on both sides of the puck, he was having an impact. He was on the score sheet. I saw him making some steals, making some blocks, throwing some hits. And he's also a kind of a smaller player, too. He doesn't have a lot of size. I'm not looking at his stats, but he's one of those sub-6 feet guys. Doesn't play like it, though. So, you know, it's, you know, he had a nice tournament. He looked good. And he was the captain and all that. If he makes the Oilers roster, you got that begs the question, like, okay, whose job is he taking?
Yeah, that's my key point, is that I don't think there's room for him. I don't. He's going to play his way onto the Oilers probably in a year, but I just don't think there's room for him right now with the Oilers lineup the way it is.
You know what? It gives them some really nice depth. If teams that have a lot of injuries, and then they don't have anyone from their minor league that can step up. Well, it looks like the Oilers are going to have some options. So, you know, when they get injuries in kind of pretty much any position, they'll have players that can they can turn to and they can call up. Now, no one's going to replace, you know, Connor McDavid or, you know, players like that. But, you know, they got some depth, which is nice.
Yeah, and he showed great chemistry with Kaylor Yamamoto. So to have that in your future and see what the future could be like, you got to be pretty excited if you're an Oilers fan. I think Gambardella is going to be a top six in Bakersfield. He had 3 points in 6 games at the end of last season when he signed with them, coming out of UMass Lowell when he graduated. He's going to be an Oiler in the near future, but I just think they've stocked up over the off season and all of last year. They kind of picked some guys up that are NHL ready and have contracts. So I think Gambardella is kind of stuck back in Bakersfield for now, but he's definitely making it tough on the Oilers. And it's nice to see the Oilers aren't just having their first overall picks making the NHL team, and they got a little bit of prospect depth now, which is always nice to see.
Yeah, and when he makes it, it won't be in a top six role either. He's more of a role player. Middle six at best would be my opinion.
All right, enough with Penticton. Let's move on to Traverse City, the big, the well-known prospect tournament that's out there. Let's begin with Alex DeBrincat, beginning and ending with DeBrincat pretty much. This kid is he's just a highlight reel. He nonstop puts in goals that are just unbelievable. His overtime goal to win the Matthew West trophy as winners of the tournament was just unbelievable. He batted it out of the air after it ricocheted off the backboards. What else can we say about DeBrincat? Like, he's just unreal. I'm pretty sure we talk about him every single episode.
Yeah, it was Alex DeBrincat doing Alex DeBrincat things. The first goal that he scored that I think tied the game. You know, the other team had it in the face-off circle area in their own zone, and he came out from behind the net, little stick lift, stole the puck. Next thing you know, he's so quick and shifty, and just before the defenseman realized he'd lost the puck, DeBrincat's in the slot, just him and the goalie. Yeah, and forget about it. It's top corner every time. Goalie had no chance. And then, yeah, to your point, the overtime game-winning goal, he just bunted it in off a rebound. And the guy can score in a number of ways. And for a little player, you like to see the guys that have that lightning-quick speed, but he's just got the lightning-quick hands and hockey sense. I don't think there's any question that he's going to be successful in the NHL. The only question is, will it be immediately or next year?
Yeah, and do you think he's going to make the Blackhawks out of camp? Is this a guy that we should be drafting or telling people to draft in redraft leagues?
I think it's still too soon to say definitively. I mean, the prospect tournament is rookies. You know, everyone is pretty young in it. We'll see what he does in the preseason when he's playing against veteran and established NHL players against NHL goalies. It's a whole different kettle of fish, right? It's a huge, like Gus said in our very first episode, it's a huge jump when you go from junior to the A, and then another huge jump when you go from the A to the NHL. So, you know, it's a jump going from junior to the prospect tournament, but not as big as a jump as going to the AHL. So the fact that he did well there, you know, okay, that's checkmark number one on the checklist of things he needs to do in order to make the NHL roster, but he still hasn't checked off have a good NHL preseason, look good at training camp. I haven't had a chance to watch him play. They're probably playing today or tomorrow, I'm not sure, but you know, by the time we go on the air again in 2 weeks or so, we'll have more to say about whether or not he can make the team.
Perfect. And another guy I wanted to bring up about Traverse City, Denis Gurianov. He started the tournament slow, but he ended up scoring a hat-trick in the Dallas Stars' last game. His name is written in pencil probably on the roster. I think he's going to be the number one guy for Texas Stars. He kind of had an okay season, 27 points in 57 games last year with the Stars in the AHL. He's a guy I'm watching throughout training camp, and maybe this will lead us into our training camp segment, but Gurianov's a guy that he started the tournament slow and came out strong in his last game and put up a hat trick and ended up with 4 goals in the tournament. So I have Denis Gurianov on my watch list and a guy that I will probably try and pick off somebody else's roster with a trade if I can. Anybody else that you would like to bring up?
Yeah, sure. Actually, a couple of guys that stood out from St. Louis were Tage Thompson and Jake Walman. And I'm not sure if you heard, but the St. Louis Blues got some injury news today. Zach Sanford has shoulder surgery, and he's going to miss 5 to 6 months.
Ooh.
And Jay Bouwmeester has an ankle fracture, and he's going to be reassessed in 3 weeks. So he's going to miss a month minimum, maybe more. And the Blues, as we talked about before in our Blues preseason episode, they've got opportunities on roster spots for wingers and defensemen, and they just lost a winger and a defenseman off their roster. So unless they claim someone off waivers, which is a possibility, or make a trade or something like that, they have the pieces to fill it from within. And I think after the Traverse City tournament, the competition that they saw between these guys probably fills them with confidence enough to just leave their roster well enough alone and not mess with it and just roll with, you know, giving an opportunity to a guy like Tage Thompson, who played 26 games in the AHL last year in the regular season and playoffs combined after his college season ended. And then you've got Walman and Jordan Schmaltz, who I thought were going to be competing for a final roster spot, but there's a possibility they could both earn a roster spot and then try and compete to keep it when Bouwmeester comes back.
All right. I kind of agree that they should just fill it. I know Vegas is sitting with like 8 or 9 NHL defensemen, and they're probably hoping that maybe the St. Louis Blues reach out because they're having defensive depth issues. But I would rather see Jake Walman than any one of the Vegas Golden Knights guys that they're trying to shop.
Yeah, and the problem with acquiring a player to fill a temporary hole is you have to give up assets to get him, and then when your injured player, Bouwmeester or Sanford, come back, then you got too many guys, and you got to get rid of someone and then, you know, put them on waivers or lose them for nothing. Unless you claim a player off waivers and you get him for free, and then, you know, when Bouwmeester comes back, you just put claimed player on back on waivers. Teams do that all the time. But yeah, I think they've got the pieces to fill it from within. We'll see at training camp. This is a nice little segue for our next segment. There are 2-3 players to watch from St. Louis Blues in training camp because they got their jobs are theirs to lose.
Yeah, and pretty much all the guys that we mentioned were going to be guys that we want to keep an eye on in training camp. They're kind of on the cusp. We're headed to the AHL, so they'll probably be last round cuts. A guy I did want to mention, kind of ask a question about, Olli Juolevi from the Vancouver Canucks. Is if he doesn't make the Canucks, which I have a feeling he's not going to, he didn't have a great prospect tournament, is he headed to Finland?
That is an excellent question. I mean, he's already won a Memorial Cup and everything with the London Knights. You would think that he'd be wanting to make some money, right?
Yeah.
You're not making any money playing the junior, but if there is a CHL team that can, you know, persuade a player to play for them, it would be the London Knights. They seem to be really good at recruiting. How about, here's another question for you, Sergachev. He's already said that the CHL isn't an option for him. If he doesn't make the Tampa Bay Lightning, where does that leave him?
Oh, man. I didn't even think of him. Like, I thought of Yolevi because I don't think he's headed back to the Knights. I don't think they can intrigue him enough. And the Knights might not be as good as they were the previous 2 years. So, Sergachev. That's an interesting one because the Spitfires are probably not going to be nearly as good. They sold off a lot of assets to make the Memorial Cup run. Does that mean he goes to the KHL or would he try and go to like a Swiss league maybe?
I don't know. You know what? Let's ask Ryan Wegman when he comes on in our third segment to talk about McKean's.
Oh, nice tease, Peter. All right. Well, we're going to head to break. And when we come back, we're going to go to look at some training camp outlook. We're going to give some guys that we see on pretty decent lines in camp, and maybe they're going to play a couple preseason games. And then after that segment, we're going to, talk to Ryan Wegman about McKean's yearbook and his thoughts on some of the prospects in that book.
Hey, everybody. Before we get into our next segment, it's Pete here. I just want to take a second to tell you about the Dauber Prospect Radio CHL Fantasy Hockey Patron League. Go to our patron page and sign up to become a patron in the $3 range, and you can play CHL Fantasy Hockey against Paul, myself, and our other patrons. The league starts September 21st, where you can pick any players you want from the OHL, the WHL, or the Q. You fill in the roster submission. You have 12 forwards, 6 defensemen, and 2 goalies. Skating scoring is 2 points for a goal, 1 point for an assist, and your goalies get 3 points for a win and 2 points for a shutout. Fill up a roster, you can pick up to 2 import players and 3 overage players, same as the CHL rules. The deadline to pick your team is September 30th, so you need to sign up and become late round sleeper patron member, fill in the registration form, which essentially is your name and the players you want, and submit that to us by September 30th. And you're in the league. Compete in fantasy hockey. Prove that you know more about it than me and Paul do. Sign up today.
All right, segment 2, we're talking training camp outlook. Some guys that we kind of are curious of how they're going to be used in preseason and if they can make the team out of camp. I think we got to start with Brock Besser. Had a great prospect tournament. We probably could have talked about him in the first segment, but we kept him for this segment. Whose eye didn't he catch in the prospect tournament and his first couple games? He is NHL ready, I believe. There'll be growing pains, but I think that might be due to Vancouver being a meh team than his actual talents. And he's got a wicked shot, Peter. I watched the Vegas and Vancouver game the other night. Just an unreal shot. That kid can fire a puck.
He was unquestionably the best player for the Vancouver Canucks and arguably the best player in the game. I mean, there's some other guys from that game that we're going to talk about a bunch of players from that game because, quite frankly, there hasn't been a lot of preseason games yet, and that's probably one of the only ones that you and I have actually watched. But yeah, man, he was lights out good, wasn't he? And he just that first goal that he scored where he took the puck and skated in the zone and all kept his feet moving, all in motion, head up on the net the whole time, and the goalie just kind of waved at the puck well after it was behind him. It was a beautiful shot. It was a goal scorer's goal. I think that he's certainly going to make the NHL this year. I don't think there's any question about it.
Yeah, he made Dylan Ferguson look real bad, and Dylan Ferguson had a pretty good game for the Knights in net. No one else really made Ferguson work hard, but I feel like Besser, every time he came over the blue line or had the puck in the slot in the home plate area, he just could fire it. He can fire it, man. Like, yeah, he had the 2 goals, but the shots that just missed the net, you were just like, holy smokes. That, like, he's going to be a goal scorer in the NHL for sure.
Yeah, no question. He's got an NHL caliber shot.
All right, talking about shots, I think Daniel Sprong shoots a ton of pucks. He just likes to drive the puck to the net and just keep firing pucks. I forget what game it was. It wasn't preseason. It was probably the Prospect Tournament. He had a power play that I think he took 5 or 6 shots, and you could tell he was just dying from taking those shots over and over and over and over again. He's just a shooter. He loves to shoot.
Where do you see him fitting in this year? Is he gonna move out of the CHL, right? He's aged out there, so it's AHL possibility.
I have a feeling he'll start in the AHL, and I think the Penguins, we have another guy, Zach Aston-Reese, we're going to get to shortly. I think they have a couple guys that are going to start in the AHL and make their way up into the Penguins, because the Penguins always seem to come up with injuries or guys that are cold or just aren't playing very well. And yeah, I think Daniel Sprong is going to play probably a quarter of a season. I don't think he'll get a full season in, but Mike Sullivan right out of camp has said that Daniel Sprong is turning heads at camp. So that's definitely nice to see Mike Sullivan say that, because Sprong kind of wasn't in his good books. He was in Mike Johnston's good books, and that's why he stuck around for 40 plus games. And they burned a year of his contract when Mike Johnston was coach. So, and then Mike Sullivan came in and they sent Daniel Sprong back to Charlottetown because they weren't ready for him and they weren't really happy with the way he was playing. So the fact that Mike Sullivan is on the Daniel Sprong train is very good to see.
All right, so he'll be competing with Zach Aston-Reese for a roster spot on the Penguins. And in training camp and preseason games, you'll see a whole bunch of different players in and out of the roster and different line combinations. I believe Pittsburgh plays tonight, don't they?
Yes, I believe they are playing tonight against Buffalo in Penn State.
Nice. And if I'm not mistaken, Zach Aston-Reese is going to be skating on a line with Malkin and Phil Kessel. What's your take on that?
I am so excited about that. I am a diehard Penguins fan deep down. Before I ever started fantasy hockey, I've been a Penguins fan for quite some time. I kind of put it away when fantasy comes around because I don't like to be biased, but Zach Aston-Reese gets me really excited if Malkin and Kessel are his line mates. And I have another feeling this guy's going to be like a Jake Guentzel. He's going to start in the AHL, and he's going to get his chance in the NHL, and he's never going back. So I have a feeling he will be an AHL start, but when he gets that chance to play in the NHL, and if he gets the chance to play with Malkin or Crosby or Kessel or Guentzel, that he's going to make a name for himself and make himself stick in the NHL.
My advice to Zach tonight is get the puck to Malkin or get the puck to Kessel.
Yeah, no kidding. And play your own game. That these kids come in. Connor Sheary had such a hard time playing with Crosby when he first came because he had that mindset that just give Crosby the puck. Just give Crosby the puck. I don't want to hold on to it for more than a couple strides. But you got to learn that these guys are great, but sometimes they don't always want the puck. But that's the difference between Crosby and Malkin. Malkin always wants the puck, and he will tell you where he wants to be on the ice and where the puck is going to be when he's got the puck. So, yeah, Zach Aston-Reese, hopefully he's a quick study and can find chemistry with Malkin and Kessel. That would just be sweet.
All right. I know you're dying to talk about him, so let's get back to that Vegas-Vancouver game, and let's talk about Tyler Wong. Tyler Wong, and what did he do in that game?
Hat trick. First hat trick ever in the Golden Knights game. I'm so excited that I get to write for the Golden Knights and cover the Golden Knights, because I feel like I'm on the, not even the bandwagon. I jumped on early, and it's exciting to be here day one watching this team build itself. And Tyler Wong, sign that kid. Anybody can sign him right now. Anybody could walk up to Tyler Wong's agent and be like, we want to sign, and he could say yes and end up leaving the Golden Knights camp and going somewhere else. That's kind of scary. Why haven't they signed an NHL contract with him? He's got an AHL contract with Chicago Wolves, but if an NHL contract comes around, I think he's going to jump all over it. So George McPhee, get on this kid. He looked fantastic in that game.
He did. Okay, so here's a little background for people who may not know who we're talking about. He's He's a little guy. He's 5'9", 172. He just finished playing in the WHL with who did he play for?
Lethbridge Hurricanes.
That's it. So he played his overage year. He was their captain last year. He scored 51 goals. He had 109 points. And when the season ended after the playoffs, he actually signed an ATO with the Toronto Marlies. And he played 3 games with the Marlies. He was used sparingly. He had 1 assist. He was not outstanding, although he had moments where he showed some flash. But he didn't really do anything that stood out or, you know, convinced the Leafs to invite him back for this off-season training camps and rookie camps and whatnot. Vegas saw something, though. They liked him. They invited him, and he dominated that game. I think one of the more impressive plays, like, he scored some beauty goals. One of the goals, it was just right place, right time, kind of a tap-in. But he had a great lead pass for his assist. I forget who he passed it to, but it was like from about his blue line to the other team's blue line, right through the neutral zone, thread the needle, hit the player on the tape in stride to put him on a breakaway from the blue line in. It was an amazing pass.
Yeah, that was Stephen Matteau.
Yeah. Did Matteau actually score on that, or did he blow it?
No, he blew it, and I want to say Hika came in and tapped it home, I think.
That's right, yeah. Well, that's enough about Tyler Wong. What about Hika, actually? He had a standout game, too.
Yeah, he's kind of been sneaky good in the prospect tournament, and or the prospect 2 games, I guess, not really a tournament because they only played against the Kings. George McPhee is a big fan of Hika, so it looks like he's going to probably make the roster at a camp, a bottom-line guy, but he can definitely produce in a bottom-line role. So I think what helps is he's been playing in the pros for 2 or 3 years now in the Czech League. So he came over with very sneaky signing by George McPhee. He was the second or third signing. I think third. I think he was right after Shapachov signed. But Hika kind of came out of nowhere. Nobody really knew who he was. And he's showing that he can play North American style game. I'm really excited about this guy too. He's not going to blow up in fantasy hockey, but he might be a guy that fills a role in the end of your bench. And I wouldn't say redraft leagues he's going to be drafted. He's only 5% owned in Fantrax, so he's definitely available, but I would like to have him on every one of my prospect rosters, prospect teams in my dynasty leagues.
Yeah, I'll throw a little cold water on him. He's 24 years old, so, you know, he's significantly older than a lot of the players that were in the Vegas training camp and rookie games and whatnot. And it's not his first tour of duty in North America. He did play in the CHL with Gatineau Olympics. About a point-a-game player over there, just a little over. And he was drafted by the Los Angeles Kings in the 6th round. But he's never played pro hockey in North America. And he looked good. I thought, you know, he stood out. And the game that we watched, while it was a preseason game, it was basically a rookie game. There was no roster players. All the Canucks players that were pretty much roster players are flying to China. So, you know, and Vegas had a real young roster, too. They didn't really play any of their veterans either. So he was one of the older players in the game. But, you know, if you're older and you don't stand out, that's terrible. And if you're older and you stand out because you should, then, you know, at least you didn't not stand out.
Exactly. All right, 2 guys that we want to mention, their early preseason line mates. Jake DeBrusk in Boston is lined up with Pasternak and Krejci, so beware of that, 35% owned. And Alexander Kerfoot, Colorado Avalanche, late signing. He didn't end up signing with the Devils, and he went to the Avs. We talked about it in our last episode of our summer series. He's 26% owned, playing with Nathan MacKinnon and Rantanen, so beware of that. Peter, Jake Virtanen, what do you think of this guy? Where is he going to line up in the Canucks lineup?
I don't think he will this year. I think he's going to play in Utica again. Now, the file on Virtanen is, you know, he's a high draft pick. The Vancouver Canucks are taking a lot of heat for drafting him ahead of some other players. In hindsight, it was a terrible decision. But he did make the NHL right out of the draft as a rookie. And he looked kind of good for a bit, and then he went, as the season wears on, the games kind of tighten up, and he wasn't able to keep up. He was a healthy scratch a lot. They decided to loan him to Team Canada for the World Juniors, and he had a disastrous tournament there. And then he finished the season in junior, and last year he played in the minors as well. So the stock on his file has been plummeting since his draft. And I think what people need to do is they need to reassess what kind of a player they think he is. He's not going to be a star top six player. He's just not capable of that. But I really liked what I saw from him in that preseason game against Vegas. He was a really strong net front presence. He was playing with a lot more veteran poise than a lot of the rookies. There was a play where he was in front of the net, and I think it was Griffin Reinhart was unable to move him or contain him or nullify him. And while Virtanen didn't score, he provided a really important screen that resulted in the goal. So I gave him an assist for that. And there was another play that he made that I was really impressed with, where he made a player on Vegas look real bad, where he came up behind him, gave him a stick lift and stole the puck, got back in the zone and created a scoring chance that I can't remember if it led to a goal or not. But I just, that particular play stuck out to me as, you know what, here's a player that's better than the average player in this game. And so I think what fans need to do is just kind of reassess who they think Jake Virtanen is. He's not an elite top six power forward, but he is probably going to play in the NHL. And I think he's going to be an important role player, and he's going to play a physical bottom six role. And he has, you know, the ability to have some offensive upside in his game. And that's okay. And that's fine. I mean, yeah, would you have rather have drafted Nylander? Well, sure. In hindsight, that's obvious, but you know, he's not a bust. I just think you need to reassess his value and what his role is. And if you have him in fantasy hockey, you need to do the same thing too. If people are willing to throw him away because he's not going to be that top six player, then you should exploit that and say, you know what, I'll give you a draft pick for him or a middling prospect that may never make it. A boom or bust player if you want, because you know the ceiling on Virtanen needs to come down, but his floor is still relevant.
All right, perfect. Let's go one last guy. One quick note on Christian Yaros of the Ottawa Senators.
Sure. So Christian Yaros is a player that has kind of come out a bit of nowhere. He doesn't have a lot of fanfare or commentary on him, but the Senators, he's been looking really, really solid for the Senators. He's more of a physical, big defenseman. He doesn't necessarily play the game, the fast skill transition style. But what he does do is he plays really, really well in his own zone. He might not translate well in fantasy hockey for leagues that don't have depth or multi-category scoring. But in leagues like the Dauber Prospects League that we have, where we have 26 odd teams with full roster and a full prospect bench, so like 50 contracts just like the NHL teams, and we have categories for hits and blocks and penalty minutes, he's a very valuable player, and especially because it's a cap league too, right? So he's a very affordable player, and he's gonna, I think, play a lot of minutes for the Sens this year and put up a lot of hits and blocks. If I were a Mark Borowiecki owner, I would be concerned.
All right, perfect. Let's head to break, and we'll catch up with Ryan Wegman talking McKean's yearbook right after this.
All right, we're back, and it's time for our interview segment. And one of our first guests in season one was Ryan Wegman, and he has been kind enough to come back and join us on the podcast today. Welcome back, Ryan.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be among the first of the 2017-18 season.
It's our pleasure to have you on. So the last time you were on, you came on with Hockey Prospectus, and we had you on because I was really interested in the prospect scoring scale thing that you created. You're not with Hockey Prospectus anymore. And just before we started recording, we kind of got into that a little bit. But do me a favor and kind of tell us how you came to be with McKean's and kind of maybe if some of our newer listeners didn't catch your episode, kind of let us know how you score prospects.
Sure. So, I got my, prospect, career, if you will, started with Hockey Prospectus. And Hockey Prospectus, for those who don't know, was a site that specialized in hockey analytics. You did a lot of, new metrics came out of Hockey Prospectus, things like GVT and the Vokoda projections, and a lot of other really interesting, some groundbreaking hockey analytical things that took place there. But what happened eventually was that the person who owned Hockey Prospectus left to follow different, slightly different career path. And that was Timo Seppä and Matt Koller, who people, if anybody is out there from the Twin Cities, would recognize from radio, or Buffalo used to be there. He took over and he was more interested in the podcast side of it than the website. And ultimately he moved to a new career opportunity in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and decided to no longer, Hockey Prospectus was no longer a going concern. And so what happened now, you mentioned, the scoring site. While I was working the prospect side of things at Hockey Prospectus, I decided that, if we're going to run things right, and if we're really going to get the coverage that I think hockey prospects deserve, and that means making sure that there really are no, to really want to do away with the term sleeper. There are no more sleeper prospects. We're going to make sure we cover everybody, because if you look at a lot of the more mainstream coverage, you're going to see people, marked as sleepers. And those are generally going to be people who played in less, leagues in that took kind of a hockey path that was less standard. So we're not looking at the guys who played for the London Knights, or the CHL, or were top 10 draft picks, or big stars at the World Juniors, but maybe guys who played in smaller colleges, or playing in the Russian junior leagues, and because Russia doesn't bring a lot of their draft eligibles to the World Juniors, they don't get a lot of love. And I realized if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to cover the hockey world right, and so that there are not going to be any more surprises, I can't do it on my own. And I started recruiting a team of people really all across the hockey world that can help cover the game. And then what I did is I kind of set like a template to make sure that if whether it's, Roman and Alessandro in Russia, or Jimmy in Sweden, or Kevin in Kelowna, or me here in Chicago, we're going to be speaking the same language. So when I get a grade from somebody in Sweden or Russia or the WHL or the Quebec League or Switzerland or wherever we have people in our team, we can grade them all on the same scale. So what I did, I'm kind of familiar. If anybody follows the baseball scouting world, and I'm a big baseball fan, I've been a baseball fan for a long time, they may have been familiar with what's called the 20-80 scale or the 2-8 scale. And that's essentially a scale that's been used by baseball scouts, not just internet scouts, but, legit professional baseball scouts, to grade players for decades and decades. What that basically says is you look at all the main attributes that you're going to look at in a player. And so in hockey, for a skater, you're looking at skating, shooting, puck skills, hockey IQ, and physicality, and grading them on a scale from 20 to 80. So a 20 grade would be, a beer leaguer. You're really not going to, the way we use the scale, 20 is a beer leaguer. It's, you're not going to see that really almost anywhere in the leagues that we scout. An 80 would be the best ever. Connor McDavid's speed, Wayne Gretzky's puck skills and smarts, Eric Lindros, I guess, kind of physicality and his shot, I think, too. Maybe Bobby Hull's shot, things like that, where like a top ever. And an average NHLer, which we look at as like a decent third line forward or a number four, number five defenseman, a reasonable starting caliber goaltender, is a 50 grade. And then it's up to us as evaluators in our various geographical areas to look at a player and grade that player on those five skills. And for a goalie, it's six different skills based on that 20 to 80 scale and projecting out what we think that player can be. And so we've tried to do that for literally every single prospect in hockey, everybody who's been drafted or signed, and everybody who has a reasonable chance at being drafted in the upcoming draft. And that way we don't see any sleepers. You know, we have surprises, of course. There are players who will take a big step forward from one year to the next that we didn't see coming. Or, you know, the reverse, players who we think are going to be stars who for whatever reason don't make it, but they're no longer going to be sleepers. And that's really what we did. So we kind of slowly built a team up around the world. We have six people covering the CHL, two for each league. There are four of us covering the AHL. So we don't stop after they're in the professional ranks. I cover the USHL as well. And I cover half of NCAA as well as one of our other scouts. And we have one person each in Sweden, Finland, and Switzerland, and two in Russia.
So you also, now that you're with McKean's, and the yearbook just came out, which is really what we wanted to get you on and talk about. I'm a reader of McKean's and have been a subscriber and an owner of the yearbook going back 10, 15 years now. And I think this year's yearbook is the best that they've ever put out. And a large part of that is the fact that the prospect coverage is so expanded. They've went from having, you know, three, maybe five prospects per team on each team page to now you've got the top 20. So I don't know how you came up with 20 relevant prospects from teams like Pittsburgh Penguins, but you did it. So was that all you, or was that like a lot of contribution from your team?
First of all, thank you very much. It means a lot to hear you say that. I appreciate, and knowing how much you know this side of the world as well, it's a really, it's a very nice compliment. Thank you. So secondly, the final product was put together by me. However, that would not have been possible without the contributions all year long from our scouts across the world. You know, if I don't have a report from Jimmy on, on Elias Pettersson, how would I know how to rank him in the Vancouver system? You know, if I don't have a report from, I have Vancouver's page up in front of me. If I don't hear from Kevin on Cole Lind, I don't know how to put him in the system either. You know, I can watch the guys I can watch and I can know them really well. And I hope that and believe that all the others on our prospect team do the same. But without their inputs, I don't know how to rank them. I'll only be able to see, you know, them on a few occasions here and there. If they're not in my own geographical area. So I can't put this list together without the team and, you know, this is not possible without them. You know, that said, the write-ups, the eventual summaries and the rankings are put together by myself with some oversight from Ian Morrill, who is the, I guess, CEO of McKean's. We kind of, you know, it's a bit of a back and forth. We use our scores, but once in a while we will adjust it here or there if there's something it doesn't feel right. But it's guided by the grades that we've been putting together all year long.
All right, let's dive deep into some of the players. I guess not deep because we're just going to stick with probably the Calder candidates. We want to get some of your opinions on the Calder candidates. And I think the preseason favorite is Clayton Keller, and across the board, maybe not everybody, but a high majority of people are giving Keller the preseason favorite title. Do you agree with Clayton Keller being the Calder favorite right now?
I don't think there's a favorite now. I think there's a group of five that I would say are the front runners, and he's among them. I don't think I'd have him as my number one, though, right now.
And what would that group of five be?
So in addition to Keller, I'll do it alphabetically so then I won't give anything away. We actually do have a list of Calder candidates in the guidebook. So alphabetically, in addition to Keller, we have Matt Barzal. We have Thomas Chabot. We have Nico Hischier. And we have Charlie McAvoy. And Keller, of course.
Those are your top five, right?
Yes. Those are our top five. And so with the Calder, we want to remember, this is not just saying, you know, who's the best, who's going to have the best career, or the best prospect. Rather, who's going to have the best opportunity to, is both ready to be at like a peak level now and has the opportunity to play at a top half of the roster role right now. And those five all should have that and I think are ready to show what they have.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Of those guys, McAvoy on Fantrax is 93% owned, and his average draft position is the highest out of those five, 147. So it's interesting to see McAvoy at the top of that list for Fantrax ADP.
He's, personally, if I have to pick one prospect this year, he's the guy I'm picking.
Really?
You know, I think what he showed last year, including his work in college, including the World Juniors, including the NHL playoffs, where he was a first-pairing defenseman, and he was awesome on a team that was not very good for the playoffs. I've always been a big fan, and he showed me that, if anything, we had underrated him going into this year. He's a number one defenseman. If not now, very soon.
Brian, you're such a smart guy. It wasn't too long ago I was on the Keaton Carlson podcast, and that was my pick as well for the Rookie of the Year. I don't think I don't think he's going to win it because he's a defenseman, and point production weighs so heavily on the Calder Award, so there'll be players that'll outscore him.
But I think he's going to score enough that people will say, oh, but you know, as a defenseman, to score that much and to play the minutes he's going to play, I think he's going to play a lot of minutes. You know, I would use words that probably we shouldn't use in this podcast to describe how many minutes he's going to play. I think he should be the front. I think personally he should be the front runner. And I don't know. Keller could do it and he could not do it. You know, Aaron Ekblad won it a few years ago. Tyler Myers back in, I guess those are the only two in the last 10 years. But I think I would put him right up there with those two guys.
Yeah, it's hard for a defenseman, and his competition right now looks pretty good. But he's my pick as well. Let's talk about another defenseman. I'm really high on this guy too, Thomas Chabot. And of course, with the injury to Carlson to the start of the season, it really gives him an opportunity to not only make the team but play some important minutes and some power play minutes too. I mean, when you take Carlson off the Sens blue line, you got Phaneuf, who is okay offensively, but he doesn't really quarterback a power play. He's got a good shot, but it's kind of rangy, and he doesn't distribute the puck super well. Do you see Chabot as the guy that the Sens turn to as the offensive catalyst from the back end until Carlson comes back?
That's tough to say. I think with an organization like Ottawa, who is a little bit more, air quotes, traditional than some, I think he's going to have to earn it and play his way into that role. And whether or not there's enough time for that to happen is to be determined. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't know exactly when Carlson will be back. That said, I think it definitely ensures that he's going to play right away. He's thankfully no longer of the age that, you know, if he's not in the NHL, he has to go back to St. John. So, you know, they have more leeway with him. But I do believe that he's going to get at least secondary power play minutes to start with. And I think he should be able to work his way up into a more front and center role in short order. I mean, I think really Ottawa's defense in general is a little bit, there's some uncertainty there, right? Not just with Carlson's injury, but you know, how good is Mark Borowicki really? And you know, is Johnny Oduya still worth playing in a top four role? I don't really know if he is, you know, and I don't know if Borowicki is really a top six. Are they going to give roles to guys like Frederick Claesson or Ben Harper? But I think Chabot should be, if the smart play would be to give Chabot steady minutes to start with and let him work his way up to a higher role gradually.
Okay. With the five guys, the one guy that really stands out, and I'm looking at ADP Fantrax with probably 10 to 12 guys that we have on the list, and we'll make sure to put it in our show notes on DauberProspects.com, the list of guys with their ADPs and ownership. Matthew Barzal does not have an ADP out of the five guys you named: McAvoy, Barzal, Keller, Chabot, Hischier. Barzal's the only one that doesn't have an ADP. Is there... Do you see a reason for that, or Is there opportunity for Barzal on the island this year?
I believe there is an opportunity for him. I mean, I can't answer to why he hasn't been drafted more. It's not, the fantasy world is not my specialty per se, but I think there definitely is an opportunity for him. Tavares is obviously the number one there. That's not changing anytime soon. But after him, there is room on the island for a new number two center. It's a matter of saying, well, are they going to give him that shot? I mean, Strome really wasn't used as a center much, but, the Islanders, like, do you believe in Brock Nelson as a number two? I don't know if I do.
Not really, no.
Not really, especially not at center. Maybe as a winger. I don't know. He's a complimentary guy. He's not bad, but Barzal really does have, I think he does have top six potential right now. I think he should have that role there. My understanding is that the new head coach, Doug Waite, is a bit more receptive to playing the younger players than was Jack Capuano. And hopefully I'm right, because they've been treading water at best in their ability to integrate their youth to their team. I think Barzal is tremendously skilled. He is a fantastic playmaker, very good skater, incredible vision. I think it would serve him well to play with more players who are as good as him. Not always be the best player on the ice at all times, as he generally was in the WHL. But he's got fantastic vision and creativity, and I think it would be a shame for the Islanders not to play him.
All right, that's good to know that Barzal isn't even getting drafted right now, and you could probably steal him in your last round and get top 6 minutes potentially out of Barzal. Another guy that kind of stands out in the ADP, Kyle Connor, 73% owned. Is he got a spot on the top six in Winnipeg? He's at 163 in ADP, which is three spots after Nico Hischier. So that's in pretty good high praise for Connor to be in the Hischier area. Does Connor have potential to be in a top six and be able to produce there?
Yes, absolutely. And again, with him, it's always a matter of opportunity, in the sense that, Patrick Laine is the number one left winger there. So it's really, are they playing Ehlers on the left or on the right? If they move Ehlers to the right wing, which they probably should, because the Jets aren't very thick at the right, Connor, I think, is their second best left winger right now. Last year, I remember watching him in Michigan 2 years ago with the Wolverines, and he was spectacular, but he was a little bit of, I'm exaggerating for effect here, but he was a little bit of a one-trick pony, in the sense that you can kind of anticipate what he was going to do. And it worked at that level, but I thought that he'd be easier, more easily exposed right now in the NHL. I didn't think he was ready last year for the NHL, but I definitely thought he was ready for the pro game. And it turns out, I was right on that one. He went to the NHL, was not very effective. He scored twice in, I think, 20 games. Then he went back to the AHL. And after a few weeks to kind of get his feet under him, he started to take off. And by the end of the year, he was the Manitoba Moose's best player. One of the better players I saw in the second half of the season in the AHL. He is a very dynamic player. He's got a great shot. He's a real, like, goal scorer's mentality. Obviously, with Laine there as well, he's not the only one in Winnipeg who has that goal scorer's mentality, but he will add a much more dynamic element to the Jets' offensive attack. And I think it would be a shame if he's not in the top six. Although I will also say, in fairness, that these days a lot of teams don't play kind of a top six, bottom six. They really play a top nine and then an energy line. And so one way or the other, he's got a spot there.
Yeah, he's lined up with Lowry and Armia right now out of training camp. So Matthew Perreault's got that spot with Little and Ehlers. So if Connor can move up to the Little Ehlers line, that would definitely help out. Let's talk the 1-2, Nico Nolan. What do you think of these two guys coming into their first pro season?
Well, we actually rank Nolan higher as a prospect. However, we think Nico's going to have a more immediate impact. Nico's game is a very dynamic game. I saw a clip making the rounds this morning about a goal he scored. I guess it was yesterday, where he showed really what he is. I mean, he's just a dynamic speed and skill and tenacity, both, 200 feet of the ice. He's going to be an exciting player for a long, long, long time for New Jersey. One of those players that can have an impact, like maybe one step shy of what Austin Matthews did last year at Toronto. That one step is a critical step, but you know, he's going to approach that. I think Patrick will probably play in the NHL this year. I don't think he is definitely a top six player right away like Nico is. So Patrick's role will be more, I think, in the as a two-way game, kind of learning how to play at that pace. I think the fact that he missed a lot of time last year will make his assimilation to the NHL a little bit slower. So I would definitely have a longer odds on Patrick being a Calder finalist. But long-term, if you're in a keeper league, he's definitely a very, very good player to have, and maybe even better than Hischier in a keeper league. But Hischier is very, very close, and he's exciting, and I think he's going to play. He should definitely be playing top six right now with New Jersey, who does not have a very deep offensive menu from which to choose.
All right. So earlier in the podcast, Paul and I were talking about Brock Besser and Alex DeBrincat, and we're obviously both impressed with them. And I'm of the opinion that there's no way Besser doesn't make the NHL this year. Not so sure about DeBrincat, though. What's your take on those two players?
I kind of agree with you. You know, Besser is NHL ready. He's a big guy. He's got a great shot. Last year, he was set back a bit by injury, so he couldn't repeat what he did the year before. But he is, he's a goal-scoring talent. And Vancouver doesn't have too much of that. It wouldn't surprise me very much if he's in their first line, which isn't saying much being Vancouver. But still, you know, it's a nice thing to have on your resume. He really is a fantastic player. I think he's going to score a lot of goals this year and going forward. If he can play with the Sedins, you know, more of the power to him. Don't know that he will, of course, but, you know, I'm talking more about potential. When we're looking at, when you mentioned Alex DeBrincat, there are a few things that, you know, can hold him back. There's always the question about his size. You know, as dynamic an offensive player as he is, and as much as he has scored over and over and over and over again in the OHL, he will always have to prove himself. Anybody that size will always have to prove himself. There is room in the NHL for those players, and I think the league is more open to looking at players who don't fit that stereotypical, you know, big farm boy look, but he'll have to prove it. Joel Quenneville is, you know, he has a reputation of letting kids play. But it's a matter of saying at the end, what do they want? Who do they feel is going to better fit them now? They're a team, unlike Vancouver, Chicago is a team that expects to be competing for the playoffs. I don't know if they're going to do it this year, but they expect to compete, and rightfully so. You know, even if they don't make it, they're still a very strong competitor. And so they will have to believe that DeBrincat, you know, for Besser, I should say, to backtrack, it's not so much about whether he can assist them now, but whether his development will be best served with him in the NHL or in the AHL. Whereas with DeBrincat, they're not looking at the development of the player as much as they're looking at, is he going to help our team now, or can somebody else help our team more? I believe that he can help their team more than most. I think he does have top six upside. I think he's just a really, really smart, intelligent player who gets over his size handicap with good speed and a very high hockey IQ. But they have to believe that he's going to be able to play with you know, the grown-ups. My understanding is so far in camp, he's been very good. And if he can keep it up through the remainder of the preseason, I think they'll give him a shot. But as we saw last year with Chicago with Tyler Mott as another example, another undersized guy, although not as undersized, they gave him a shot early. And as soon as it wasn't really working out, they had no problem sending him back down to the minor leagues. So if I had to bet, I do think DeBrincat will break camp with Chicago.
Interesting. And Brock Besser, 3 goals and 2 assists in his first 2 preseason games, which is pretty nice. I brought this question up to Peter in our first segment. Olli Juolevi, could he be headed to Finland? And he turned around and came back with, what about Mikhail Sergachev? Where does he end up if either of these guys don't make their NHL teams? They both don't seem like they want to go back to the O, to London or Windsor. So where do you think Juolevi and Sergachev end up this year?
I would think, okay, first let's start with Ioleví. I don't know that Ioleví is ready. I don't know what his, you know, finish prospects would be. I know he played his amateur hockey with the Jokerit team, but I don't know if they would own his rights. I don't know, you know, because he's already signed to a contract with Vancouver. He signed his ELC. I'm just double checking that. Yeah, he signed his entry level contract. So I think the Canucks would have to be, would have to approve him going back to Vancouver, going back to Finland, if he doesn't play in the NHL. So, you know, I think he'll get his five. I think he'll get that nine games at the beginning of the year. I don't know though that he's ready, and I don't know that Vancouver wants him on the team right away. I mean, if you look at the Vancouver blue line, it's not the deepest in the world, but there are, you know, at least six quote-unquote NHLers. So I don't know if they would want him right away playing in the NHL, but I couldn't say, and I wouldn't want to put words into Jim Benning's mouth about where they would prefer him to develop. But who, I don't know, like, who does he beat? Is he beating Edler or Stetcher, Delzato, Tanev, Hutton, Gudbrandsson? I don't know. And I think that they'd like Patrick Wierkocz to play in the NHL as well.
Yeah, you never say a player can't make it or won't make it.
But he's got to beat somebody.
Yeah, and I think he's got to change some opinions as well. He's got to not give Vancouver a choice, but other than to put him on the roster. And
that's basically it, yeah.
Tall order, right?
It is. It is, because there's not like an obvious spot for him. Last season, he didn't have the best year. I think, you know, I would say it was slightly disappointing. He's still a very good prospect, without question, but, you know, he didn't kind of take that step forward that you want to see. He didn't do what Charlie McAvoy did, you know, or Thomas Chabot, or even Sergachev to an extent. He kind of had an okay year with London. He showed flashes of the guy who was drafted fifth overall, but he never dominated. And so he'd have to really show something that he didn't really show last year in order to force his way on the team, which is why I am doubtful he has more than a, you know, that nine game cameo. And even that I wouldn't guarantee.
Yeah, the contractual situation works against him as well. That, mm-hmm. you know, they've got players that have NHL contracts that need to get paid and are pro contract players, and Ioleví's someone they can slide in junior for a year. What about Sergachev? He came right out and said OHL is not an option.
So Sergachev, again, I'm gonna double check to look at his contract status. I don't know it off the top of my head, but Sergachev is a bit more of an interesting case. I think Sergachev is more pro ready for the NHL. I wouldn't be surprised in Sergachev's case if there really is a spot that's more available to him. I mean, if we look at the Tampa blue line, obviously, you know, Hedman and Strahlman they're not going anywhere, but I could see Sergachev being even in the second pairing. I mean, you know, am I going to say that Jake Dotchin is better than him now, or Dan Girardi? Dan Girardi, I mean, if we look at what he did with the Rangers the last few years, he's barely NHL caliber anymore.
Yeah, same with Slater Cuckoo. He had a long look in the NHL, and they sent him back.
Slater Cuckoo, he's been, you know, he's a very good skater, but he's never really forced the issue. I think I think he was 10th overall pick. He's been almost, you know, he's close to being labeled a bust.
Yeah.
For how high he was drafted.
Schuster's, he looks like he's just holding on by a thread. He's a bench.
Basically.
He's a seat warmer.
Basically, you know, that's pretty fair. I think that's a fairly fair assessment. So I think for Sergachev, there is definitely room for him to force it. I think as long as he's good enough, and if he's, you know, as you say, threatened to go back to Russia, there's very little reason for them not to play him. You know, Tampa also wants to play in the playoffs this year, and they really should. They were very close to it last year in spite of all their injuries. And I think Sergachev makes them a better team. Sergachev did take a step forward last year. Not a huge step forward, but enough of one. I think there's really, it's up to him. Like, if he shows that he's at least can be as good as the others who are already there, he'll win a job.
Well, you heard it here first. Ryan Wegman from McKean's says, Mikhail Sergachev is going to make Tampa Bay, and we're going to have you on next year, and we're going to look back at this and say, you were right,
or I'm a moron.
All right, I think that's all we got for you today, Ryan. Thanks so much for coming on, man. Really appreciate. And again, stick tap for the job everyone at McKean's did on the yearbook. If you don't own it, you're doing it wrong. Go out
and take
it.
And I just want to say, yeah, you can get the yearbook at the website McKeenshockey.com, and it comes with for I think $9.99. You get 3 free months, 3 months subscription, which will get you access to the scouting reports that we put out regularly, as well as the book. And I think there's also the 12-month option, which is, I think, a bit better value. You get 12 months for $35, gets you 12 months and the annual, and it would get you the draft guide, which we'll be putting out, you know, next May or June.
Yeah, the draft guide is must-own stuff too. And last but not least, Ryan, where can we find you on Twitter? You're a good Twitter follow.
I am on Twitter. I tweet these days as much about or more about politics as I do about hockey since I moved to the U.S., but I am R.A. Wagman, R-A-W-A-G-M-A-N.
If only American politics gave you something to talk about.
I know, it's so boring here.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on, and we'll see you in the rink, pal.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
All right, thanks for coming on, Ryan. Again, that is R.A. Wagman on Twitter. Great follow. Puts out a lot of great content. We also want to thank you, the listener, for sticking with us. Our season premiere is in the books. No lead characters were killed off from the first season. Peter and I have both returned. Don't forget, if you want to support Dauber Prospects Radio, you can head to patreon.com/DPRshow and become a DPR patron by becoming a draft eligible, a late round sleeper, a first rounder, a scout, or even a corporate sponsor. To get into the CHL fantasy pool and compete against myself and Peter, you will need to become a late round sleeper. Only $3 a month. Head over to patreon.com/DPRshow. All the details for the DPR Fantasy League are there for you to see. Deadline to submit your lineups is September 30th at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Go have a look. That's patreon.com/DPRshow. Please make sure to give us a follow on Twitter at DPR_show. You can also follow our personal accounts at Zwambag, ZWAMBAG, and at PHarling, PHARLING. That's it for now. Talk to you soon, Peter.
Cheers.